That's a good one. And also firing blind or firing in the dark. That's another 412-200-5975. This one's from 2009. Bill Toms and Mark Reisman, live on the Saturday Light Brigade, May 2nd to be exact.
If you see my one true love, tell her that she was always in my heart, in that I can see no light, only my brother's voice keeps me alive. And I remember you on the 4th of July. You held my hand, I stood by your side. 4th of July. In that I never felt so cold. I served my country well, but the pain won't let go. In that I fight for breath, sinking into the night. This is where my journey ends, and I remember you on the 4th of July. You held my hand, I stood by your side on the 4th of July. Disappeared and the cries have gone away. And Dad, when you think of me, remember the times when the sun shone so bright. Oh, remember me on the 4th of July. You held my hand, I stood by your side on the 4th of July.
They sound great, don't they? Mark Reisman and Bill Toms. 4th of July, live on the radio with us. Back in May of 2009. Fire Up the Barbie is one additional suggestion from Chaplain Steve. And I think we named all of our fire idioms. If there are any we missed that you might like to pass along, feel free to do so at 412-200-5975. Coming up, a story from the WQED Writers Contest. Also, some more songs for the holiday weekend. And we also have our Youth Express Hours. Stick around. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square. Along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, and internet radio stations everywhere, including slbradio.org/radio. This story is by Libby, and it's called My Beautiful World.
My name is Libby. I'm 7 years old. I live in Upper St. Clair. And the title of my story is My Beautiful World. I love animals. When I grow up, I want to become a veterinarian scientist to help animals. Animals are unsung heroes. They provide more services to Mother Earth than any other species. Elephants provide water for other animals. Beavers combat climate change. Llamas guard farms. And rats detect landmines. Bees are powerful pollinators. Like humans, animals also need help. As a veterinarian scientist, I will create inventions that help animals. Using my viola, I will compose veterinary music that will help animals with chronic pain or recovering from surgery, and also help them sleep better. I will teach art to animals to control their emotions. I will teach karate to animals for self-defense against predators. I will teach animals soccer so that they learn teamwork. I will read books about kindness so animals don't hurt each other. I will build the best veterinary hospital and provide free medication. I will start a revolution so that every family adopts at least one pet. By taking care of pets, humans learn to love and care for others. The earth becomes one beautiful place to live when it is surrounded by love and care. Be kind to everyone on Earth.
What a beautiful story. We will have more next weekend from the WQED Writers Contest. Our pleasure to work in partnership with our friends at WQED Multimedia.
Happy 4th of July!
My working hands, the sea crossing turned my insides. We left to the sound of a marching band to sail at the change of the tide. When I saw Mary, her father said he was sailing across the deep blue for brighter new days in a promised land, and she would be going there. So I keep her in my mind. There's a picture on my wall. Oh, my love is in America. My love could be anywhere at all. Oh, how we cried on darkest night, with everyone leaving the land, the old generation just sitting tight, and all of us young bucks with plans. I am using the name of another man to get a job here for more pay. I will walk these strange streets for a better life. London's the place, so they say. I keep her in my mind. There's a picture on my wall. Oh, my love is in America. My love could be anywhere at all. music's the one thing that's traveled well. We meet up and play from our souls. The kitchen, the work yard, the seven bells give us a glimpse of our homes. Maybe I'll make it to New York State. Maybe I'll just up and go. Maybe I'll get back to my hometown, see if there's work I don't know. So I'll keep her in my mind. There's a picture on my wall. Oh, my love is in America. My love could be anywhere at all. I've sent many letters to no avail. Her silence is deafening to me. Maybe she lives with another man across in the new country. Till I know, I will keep her in my mind. Oh, oh, my love is in America. My love could be anywhere.
Burke, along with David Surrett, My Love is in America, from the album When the Small Birds Sweetly Sing. Coming up, you're going to hear an episode from our Remaking Tomorrow Youth Takeover podcast. I think you'll enjoy it. I also think you'll enjoy stopping by our solar concert series. It kicks off this coming Thursday and will run every Thursday in July and August. This Thursday, July 7th, it's Miss Freddie's Home Cooking Band, a mix of gospel, blues, classic rock, country, and more, at Buell Community Park. Join us July 7th at 12:15. We're proud to collaborate with Children's Museum of Pittsburgh and Nova Plays for the 2022 Solar Concert Series. Last week's segments with Emily Pinkerton of the Early Maze, Morgan Hawkins of Renaissance City Choir, and librarian Kathy Lowry from Bridgeville and South Fayette Libraries are now available on demand at neighborhoodvoices.org. You'll also find lots of other past features. Here at SLB, we produce a very popular podcast called Remaking Tomorrow, hosted by Greg Baer and Ryan Rzdeski. They speak with thought leaders in the world of education from all over the country. For the last two springs, they've turned over the podcast series to youth for Youth Takeover episodes, and we thought you'd enjoy hearing one of these episodes recorded live in our studios.
You're listening to a Youth Takeover edition of the Remaking Tomorrow podcast, where teens host the program and welcome peer guests.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of learning. I'm Henry, and I'm here with
Brendan,
Rishi,
and Daniel.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning practices in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
And so I think we're going to hop right into a discussion about defining personalized and equitable learning. So does somebody want to take their first stab at it?
Personalized learning, I feel like, to me, is kind of a curriculum that you don't have to follow. You can, but you can pick and choose parts of it that best apply to your personality. If you're somebody who's more of a history person, you choose more history classes. And having that kind of freedom to be able to choose what you want to do and focus on it, I mean, I think that's pretty vital to building your character, understanding what you want to do whenever you get to higher education, testing the waters a little bit, kind of having a curriculum built for you.
Though yeah. The one thing that I would add is personalized learning, in addition to being everything Rishi just said, is also having the teacher know where you are and having them being able to say, we're going to go a little bit slower today, we're going to go a little bit quicker today.
Yes.
I think it's a day-to-day thing of how are you feeling and how much can you do today. Because if you try to go too fast and people aren't ready, it's not going to be in their heads and it's not going to work. And if you go too slow, you're just going to be missing out on learning that can be done. And so personalized learning, to me, part of that is having a class every day that is where you need it to be in terms of rigor and in terms of challenge.
And I think a third aspect for me for personalized learning is not just about making sure that every student's getting the help they need to be on the same page, but also helping students be curious in what they're learning. Making sure not that students are just choosing their own path, but they're curious about what they're choosing. And true learning happens, you know, when a student is so interested in it that it's no longer about, you know, the grades or the tests or the assignments, and they just want to learn about it and understand it and have that big picture view of it. And I think that's where personalized learning really is at its best.
I do think it's important, though, to be able to not just do everything that you thoroughly enjoy, because you don't know if you'll enjoy something else if you try it. Even if I'm really into history, trying a STEM thing, maybe I'll like it, right? I think it is important to try to push yourself to do things that you're not so used to, go out of your comfort zone a little bit.
For my personal definition of personalized learning, it's everything pretty much you guys said. It's taking what you're doing and branching away from what's going to work for everybody. And while, yes, it is important to try to make something that works for everybody, but that's not always going to be the case.
Yep.
So taking your learning and making it your learning. It can't be her learning, their learning, your learning. And then to define equitable learning, I think it benefits everybody, but is also something that is going to benefit each person individually as opposed to a whole.
I think part of that is doing projects on your own, individual projects, because you can have a class that you really enjoy. You can have a history class that you're full of history nerds. But even within that, you might like the Civil War, and they might like the Revolutionary War, and she might like the Vietnam War. And so being able to say, I'm going to focus on this, I'm going to focus on my thing, I'm going to focus on the Civil War, and I'm going to do a really comprehensive, deep-diving project on that is part of personalized learning in terms of being in the right class, and then within being in the right class, being on the right topic, one that you enjoy and makes you very curious.
With being able to dive into a personal project, you gain a specialized knowledge that you wouldn't gain from just memorizing dates or memorizing things that happen. You gain the knowledge of a story which you can use to tell other people. That's something that's really interesting in equitable learning, and I think there's a lot of opportunities out there for students to have, but it's not given to every student. They can start learning now and build their knowledge and love for or passion for it, but if they don't know about it, if it's not equitable for every student, if they don't have these opportunities, then there is no way that they can grow that.
Part of what I feel isn't equitable about learning, but I think is very important to foster, is everything is connected, and I think deep dives are great. And I think students are going to find interest in different things, and I obviously encourage students to dive into what they're interested in. But I think also understanding like the social implications of different issues and how it relates into maybe like math and science development, or, you know, I've seen this a lot between like physics and calculus. Like, you can sort of make your own connections as to how this applies. I don't think that's always something that's fostered or necessarily focused on, but I think it's a very important part of learning.
I always love classes that transcend barriers, that aren't just focused on what they're teaching. We have a few classes at our school. One's urban research and design, which I've talked to students about making. And, you know, it's a history class, but it also involves math. It involves planning. It's a whole project aspect to it that you wouldn't think of. Different unique classes like that, I think, engage students to learn topics which they might not be so open to in different ways, because it has a little something for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of careers, too. For example, I'm interested in engineering, and engineering, like, on the surface is a lot of math and a lot of science and understanding how that works, but there's also a sense of, like, a social and historical aspect of why is this area that I'm building something in here? What has affected it? Like, how will my building affect the community? And How should the community affect what I'm building? So I think that's an important mindset to have outside of just education.
So I think we can talk about the student-to-teacher ratio.
Yeah, me and Daniel can attest to this. Yeah. I used to go to Chartres Valley, went there for 1 year, and I used to go to Montessori school before that. So that's a really small learning environment, right? It's very hands-on. Teacher's right there telling you stuff, teaching you stuff, and then you go to this huge school, and you're very on your own. You're in classes with probably the smallest class would be like 30 kids. Huge classes, right? And I have cousins who go to Mount Lebanon, so spoke to them about it, how big their classes are. They got to navigate their way through the school. And then having that shift to Winchester, you know, it's very small classes, right, Daniel? Like,
yeah.
So there's one class that has like four kids in it.
Four kids.
Four kids.
French class.
Right. And one, you actually get to talk with each of those kids. And you can't stay so isolated to one friend because everybody's right there. And two, what it does, getting to our point, teachers can be very hands-on with you and your work and just knowing, okay, this is what needs to be done. This is what you need to improve on. And it can be challenging at times because of how much they can look at your work, but it is very helpful, I think, academically. But I know other schools don't have that, and they're missing that at times, right?
We have seminar once a week, and it's where we have not a teacher, but some sort of administrator or specialized kind of person. And they'll come in and they'll teach us a skill, or they'll teach us a topic that we need to know about. And we go once a week, and so I like to go on Monday because there are a lot fewer students. It's like 5 or 6 instead of like 20 or something. And the difference is huge in terms of just the kind of environment that you feel like you're in. There's nothing really empirical. There's nothing tangible that you can like hold, but it just feels more encouraging to ask questions. If you're confused, say, hey, you know, what's going on with that? Or to just, you know, make sure that you're being in the conversation and following along instead of you feel like you're more detached from what's happening. Yeah. The effects of being in a smaller class, that it really does feel more personalized. You can kind of move it the way you want to move it compared to if it's a lot bigger.
I can speak to larger classes. I go to North Allegheny, which has 1,400 students just at my school, and that's just 11th and 10th graders. We have about 700 kids in a graduating class. And I have frequently 30 kids in my classes, which is in contrast from, I'm sure, your experience at Winchester Thurston. But it can be done well and it can be done wrong. You know, I've been in classes with a lot of students where you don't feel the ability to speak out. But I think something that some teachers have done right, especially coming out of the pandemic, is learning how to like check in with their individualized students, but also make sure that they're not neglecting the entire class. And I think something that one of my teachers has done, actually a few of my teachers, is they do like little check-ins, either at the beginning of class as a group, like we'll do thumbs up to thumbs down, like how are you mentally, how are you physically. Gives people the opportunity to talk just at the beginning of class, and then it's not necessarily spending the entire class going to each student, but still making sure each student feels cared for and has an opportunity to speak out if something's wrong. So I think a large class of 30 sounds daunting, but it can be done right in the sense where, you know, you feel the ability to go up and talk to your teacher and get help, or it can be done wrong and you feel overwhelmed by the amount of students and you don't feel cared for individually.
We had an English class. I think we were hybrid at this point.
Yeah.
But she would do these Google Forms at the beginning of each class. And it would be, you know, how are you? How are you feeling today? What's on your mind? And if it was something really kind of odd or really kind of extraordinary, she might check in with you at some point. But the idea was that she would kind of gauge just the feeling in the room of who's dealing with what and how focused are we on actually getting stuff done today. And she could adjust what's going on accordingly to either, you know, make it a little more rigorous, a little more fast-paced, or just slow it down. You know, if it's Friday afternoon, we're not really there yet, she could kind of change it and adjust it. And I think that was really important for personalized learning, interacting with the teacher, even if it's through a Google form, of just being able to talk to her and have her understand where we were at that point.
The beauty of that is it makes a student really comfortable in a class.
When you have a situation like that, it encourages people to speak up. And I think that's something that needs to happen more.
Yeah. How do you think peers can do that for each other?
Really understanding that not everybody learns the same way.
Yeah.
So, you know, not mocking someone if they don't understand something at the board. I, in eighth grade, struggled with that a lot because I'm not great at math, and I struggled to have any faith in my ability, you know, getting up to the board and doing work for the class. And it was because students were like, oh, you don't know what you're doing kind of thing. And my teacher actually had me do it one-on-one with him to start off instead of doing it in front of the class. And, you know, eventually I got to doing it in front of the class. And I think students can do a lot better at encouraging each other.
Yeah.
When you're in a class and you feel like you're an outlier, it really makes you afraid to do anything in that class, be active in that class. So I think that if students made a very conscious effort to support one another instead of bashing one another, I think that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
Learning is about making connections and really getting it. And so everyone like makes those connections in a different order and at a different speed.
Yes. Yeah.
And so when there are fewer students in the classrooms, I think you become more gracious to the order that they're making those connections and how quickly they're making those connections. And so when they're smaller classrooms, it's so much easier to just understand that they're doing their thing at their pace and having the teacher being able to focus on that because it's four kids instead of 40 is just absolutely massive.
Yeah. Over the pandemic, as I'm sure a lot of schools did, had a lot of students who were just stressed out all the time, and teachers were having trouble figuring out how to deal with it because, you know, we're online, we're in person, it's constantly changing situation. One of the ideas that we came up with is giving students more time to either relax, like we had different calls you could join where there would be like music or time to study, time to talk to somebody, or time to give feedback to administrators, or just giving that time as like a structured time, like this is still your school day, but you have time to study. And it was not a complex solution to come up with or to implement, but it went a long way for a lot of students in giving that extra time.
So my school did the Wellness Wednesdays. We had an entirely asynchronous day, so we didn't have to join any classes or anything, but the entire point, it was a day-long study hall. So you still had to upload work, but you structured it. And it relates to the entire idea of more personal learning because, you know, someone who struggles with some social situations and just, you know, being at school, it was nice to be able to hop on a Teams call with a teacher of mine and have a one-on-one session for like 30 minutes.
Do you feel like you got more done during this time?
Oh, I got significantly more done. Mm-hmm. I went from B average student to an A every class, didn't miss really any assignments. It was amazing, the difference.
Yeah, and I think a big benefit of that is you're not only teaching students to like take back some time for themselves and have some time to get work done and not necessarily be going the entire week, but also you're teaching them to structure their time, to reach out for help when they need it, and you're teaching other important skills that are beneficial to students outside of high school and outside of the pandemic.
We had had something a little similar at our school. We called them asynchronous Wednesdays, but they were effectively the same thing. And what I really liked about them was that if you felt like you were behind in class or that you didn't understand the material, the teachers were always available on Zoom so that you could talk about it and you could really understand it in a way that we couldn't really do before when there were only a limited amount of time that you could talk to teachers. And so in terms of equitable learning and personalized learning, I think it was really nice to have that extra time to use it how you needed to use it.
I don't know the perspective of children in lower schools or elementary schools. I know it's much more tough for them. I feel like there is that age separation part. All of us at this point been through school, and now I feel like we have the maturity level to be like, okay, we have this time to ourselves. We know we have to get this work done, and we know it's due. Like, you have to make sure, yes, you're given this time, like a Wednesday, like a whole day off. You can take it as a day off, or you can do what you're supposed to do and finish your work. I think that goes beyond school a little bit. It goes on to like your professional life because that has changed as well. And you do have the opportunity to be at home and, you know, you can take the day off, but you have to be able to meet the consequences if you don't finish your work. I think that's a skill that, I mean, at least I know I've learned from being able to go online. It's more responsibility aspect of it as well.
Moving forward, do you think there's possibility or even an advantage to bringing that back, even though we're back in person?
So I'm not sure. In one hand, I'm like, yeah, it's going to be very useful because I benefit from it. But there are other people who don't benefit from it exactly and, you know, to no fault of their own. I think it would be a trial and error thing.
Yeah.
I think it should be tried before, you know, we make the decision of if it's going to work or not.
Yeah, and I think going into the future, it brings into this discussion of how should schools be supporting students in a more like social and non-strictly academic perspective. I think especially over the pandemic, we saw a lot of schools addressing topics like mental health and student stress. And I hope it continues to set a precedent for the future where schools are not strictly about academics, but we're starting to bring in this social aspect about how students manage their time, how students spend their time outside of school, students balance between school and extracurricular activities and time where they're not necessarily doing something structured. The pandemic sort of forced students to develop their own like study communities. For a human geography class that was like the hardest class at the intermediate high school for many students, we had a study group where before a test we would spend an hour or two for the 2 or 3 days before the test, studying, reviewing terms, like planning out essays. And it really helped. And we all did really well in all the tests. That was something like, you know, we had a mix of people who were hybrid and who were fully virtual. And so we were able to sort of lean on each other to learn the concepts. And we sort of developed a community where we were focused on like learning it, you know, and we were interested in it. And it would be after the test and we would still be discussing the ramifications of this social issue or how this is affecting our daily lives or how it's not. And so I think it developed a community of learners, at least for some of the kids at my school.
Yeah. Speaking more to the community, I feel like the one beautiful thing about this whole experience is that we kind of have a new landscape, right, a virtual landscape, that it can transcend different barriers which we have in real life. That travel barrier is non-existent. And I personally found, and Daniel, you can attest to this, as we're both on mock trial, like what you said, creates a close-knitted community.
I think it's kind of a double-edged sword in that I have been in so many communities that I had to be a part of because of how life had turned virtual. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you needed to be in the group chats and you needed to be on the Zoom meetings and all that kind of thing. But I remember there was one student in particular. There was something about his schedule in that he couldn't meet with the rest of the kind of the study group at that time. And it was math. And so we were all kind of doing it together and we were teaching it to each other. And he was a bit on the outside, and he was a bit isolated.
Yep.
And I think he felt the effects towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I had talked to him about it afterwards, and he had additional responsibilities at home, and his parents were traveling and doing this and doing that. And so he couldn't do all the same things that we could do. You know, had we been in school, I think it would have been easier for us to include him and kind of bring him into the fold of what we were doing. And so finding a way to either use some of the virtual tools in the physical space to make it better for everyone or to include the people who might be left out otherwise in the virtual space when we're doing it that way is also very important.
Yep, I agree.
What is one thing that parents and or educators can do to support every learner?
A lot of educators can really get acquainted with mental situations and understand how it looks, the different ways that it can be projected. Mental disorders, disabilities, et cetera, appear different in every person. And I think a lot of educators and parents too, and students, you know, everybody can get more versed in what it looks like for different people to better tailor to said person.
My answer for that would be to encourage curiosity, because I think every student is passionate about their thing. And I think the future of learning is letting that curiosity lead education and the curriculum and schoolwork.
I think what that's done through is seeing something in students and saying, you know what, I think you should do this competition, or I think you should do this project, or I think you would really enjoy doing something like this, and just putting that out there. Just saying that for a student makes them feel like, you know what, my teacher's looking out for me, they're looking for opportunities for me. That gets a student, one, really into it, and then if they try to pursue that, it's really important that a parent supports them through that process. Personally, I couldn't get through some of the work I've done without my parents' support. It's going to be what you are going to do when you grow up, not what a parent or someone else thinks you should do, right? And they should foster that, and they should encourage you to do that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one of the most beneficial things that parents and educators can do is just sharing a curiosity. And shout out to my history teacher. I think he's done a really good job of this year. We've been going through all of American history for AP US History, and it's a really fast-paced class, and you don't get time to deep dive. But he's given opportunities to say, hey, if you want to learn more about this, here's this article, here's this resource, here's this thing that you can go look into and continue to learn more about this, just for curiosity's sake, not necessarily for a class or for a grade.
Thanks to our guests for joining us today. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning, a Pittsburgh-based network of people and organizations that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning practices in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. Learn more at remakelearning.org.
Hope you enjoyed that. You can subscribe to the Remaking Tomorrow podcast and hear all of the Youth Takeover episodes and the traditional episodes too, wherever you look for podcasts. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, Chad Green, and also Alexis Thompson. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings on a network of great community radio stations, and internet radio stations and streaming services, including PCTV, Comcast 21, Verizon 47, Pittsburgh, Tube City, online at WMCK.FM McKeesport, Loudspeaker 1, Fort Collins, Colorado, TuneIn, Simple Radio, Streama, Radio Garden, and slbradio.org/radio.
You might wake up some morning to the sound of something moving past your window in the wind. And if you're quick enough to rise, you catch a fleeting glimpse of someone's fading shadow. Out on the new horizon, you may see the floating motion of a distant pair of wings. And if the sleep has left your ears, you might hear footsteps running through an open meadow. Don't be concerned, it will not harm you. It's only me pursuing something I'm not sure of. Across my dreams with nets of wonder, I chase the bright elusive butterfly of something to believe in. You might have seen me running through the long abandoned ruins of the dreams you left behind. If you remember something there that glided past you, followed close by heavy breathing. It's only me pursuing something I'm not sure of. Across my dreams with nets of wonder, I chase the bright elusive butterfly of love.
So this song just came in this past week. It's Shelton and Williams, and very odd because I heard that song on a Sirius radio station that I listened to. It just happened to come on, and I was thinking, oh, it's neat to hear that song. It's been a while, so I looked for a version of Bob Lind, who sang it originally, singing it online, and then the very next day that bluegrass version of it came in from Shelton and Williams. I hope you enjoyed it. Coming up momentarily, we're going to talk with Abigail Whippitch. I hope I got that right. I did. About her work in the environment. It's a segment I've been looking forward to for some time. Here's hoping you'll join us for our solar concert series. Make a note, July 7th, this coming Thursday, and every Thursday at 12:15, we have a free concert series, all powered by solar power. We begin this Thursday with Miss Freddie's Home Cookin' Band, a mix of gospel, blues, classic rock, country, and more. You can find the whole schedule at slbradio.org. We hope you'll join us. I'll be excited to meet you. This week's concert is at Buell Community Park. The Solar Concert Series is a collaboration with Children's Museum of Pittsburgh, Nova Place, and SLB Radio.
The Saturday Light Brigade is made possible in part with support from the Allegheny Regional Asset District, putting Allegheny County sales tax dollars to work in regional libraries, parks, sports facilities, and arts and culture programs. Learn more at radworkshere.org.
As I started to mention before, we have Abby Whitvich here with us of Woodland Hills High School. How are you, Abby?
I'm good.
I'm so glad that you're here, and I hope summer's off to a good start. When was the last day of school? A couple of weeks now?
May 27th.
Oh, you guys ended early.
Yeah, we started really early.
Well, that's so you've had some time to acclimate. So I'm excited about the work you've done, and I almost don't know where to start. I guess my first question is just, how did you develop a passion and a sensitivity about the environment? Do you recall a light bulb going off, or just when you started to feel as strongly as you do and wanted to take action to try to help minimize current effects, but also just make the world more likely to improve over time?
I've always loved animals ever since I was like really little. And so I've always researched about animals, and that kind of just led into that because animals are heavily affected by climate change. And I've always loved just being here on the earth, and like I love nature. I loved going outside, and I would see these things be affected by climate change, and I always wanted to do something to help that.
Can you explain some of the changes you learned about? Because I think there are lots of folks who think that climate change isn't impacting us in any real way yet. But that's not the case, is it?
It's not. There are things that people don't even think about. Like, for example, a big one for me is that Pittsburgh has really low air quality because of like all the steel mills and things that happened. And, you know, there's still things happening. And I have asthma. And that is such a like big effect of people with asthma. Like there are days I can't really go outside without having an asthma attack. And it really sucks. And people don't realize that's why a lot of their kids have asthma, or they might have asthma, and they just don't even make that connection that that's climate change. That's us putting things into the air that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, it you know, when I was younger, we had made a lot of great improvements in air quality, so we thought. Some of that had to do with eliminating pollutants that you could see, but there's still a lot of irritants and pollutants that are in that need to be addressed. And what do you think the trick is to doing that? I guess to me, it's not polluting in the first place, rather than trying to clean things up after the pollution occurs.
Yeah, definitely trying to cut out as many things as we can that's causing the pollution is a big one. And then really, like, we need plants. They help filter the air. That is a really big thing. Trees, especially. And there's, like, especially downtown, there are trees. We have parks, but it's not a lot compared to buildings and working things that are happening. So definitely get more plants and start to try to cut out as much of that as we can.
Now, you've been involved in a number of projects, and I don't have a list of them in front of me. I know one of them involved stewardship of trees. I think you've done some work with solar power too. And I would just love to hear you share some of what you've done?
Okay, so recently I've been more in contact with, like, Lauren from Communitopia, and so that's I've been doing so many things with her. It started out with I brought me and my green team's ribbon tree to the climate summit, and then it just kind of all went from there.
Now, what's a ribbon tree?
A ribbon tree is basically we made it can look like a tree, but we made it more just like it looks almost more like a stump of a tree than a tree, but basically you tie ribbons on it, and what it says on the ribbon is something you love and wouldn't want to lose to climate change.
Oh, okay, so it's a work of art.
It's an interactive art piece.
So it starts with a stump and maybe some kind of spine, and you tie ribbons on it representing, as you said, something you wouldn't want to give up. Was that put in the high school so that everybody could add to it?
Yeah, it was in the high school after we built it, and then we brought it to the climate summit, and a lot of people added stuff there, even the mayor. And then it's going to just keep returning, and it's going to get bigger and bigger.
Wow. And you might remember, as you're listening to Abby and I talk, the Communitopia climate summit involving Lauren, who Abby mentioned, this was all held back in April, I think, if memory serves. So what kind of things did people write on the ribbons? Did anything, any common things or anything that really surprised you?
The thing that surprised me the most was honestly, I think climate change needs to be taught more because people didn't really understand what that meant, especially at my high school when I did it. Like, for example, a lot of people put their mom, and I was like, you're not going to lose your mom to climate change. But a lot of people did put things like the trees or animals, and they don't want things to go extinct, or they don't want to have worse air quality. And I think that was really meaningful whenever people were really connecting with that and not just, like, writing whatever down, but, like, really connecting with that and putting what really means, like, something to them.
I think of things like beaches and coastal towns especially, and I guess I think a lot about water and the way that water levels have fallen so much. Do you think those things are impacted by climate change?
Oh, definitely. That's a really big effector of climate change because not only are, like, water levels rising, the water that, like, we have is getting severely, like, polluted with things. And it's not just, like, oceans people think of. It's, like, our creeks here. We have tons of creeks here. We're actually the second state with the most creeks behind Alaska.
Hmm.
Yeah. So we have a lot of water here, but it's all getting polluted because nobody's, like, taking action to keep that out of our water.
This is Abby Whippich, who is a rising junior, or are you about to be a
senior?
Yeah, a rising junior at Woodland Hills High School. She is from Turtle Creek, and she's been doing great work for the environment. You mentioned the Green Team at Woodland Hills High School. Tell me about that group.
The Green Team is a small group of people at the high school. It's just like a club. Anybody can sign up. It's definitely not a very demanding club. Like, you don't have to be there. It's not like you're here, you get out. And we do things like the climate summit, but we also do a lot of chill things. Like, we will go bird watching. We'll learn about birds. We propagated plants. I still have a bunch of those in my house. And yeah, we just do stuff like that. It's a really chill club.
And then there's also the Environmental Action Team at the high school, which is a different group, right?
Yes.
And you're in both of them, but how does that club differ?
The Environmental Action Club, it's more, like, again, they're, like, more taking action. They're doing things. They're talking to the school board. They're hosting things like that. The Green Team is more chill, like, getting in touch with nature.
So, interesting. So the Green Team those work hand in hand. That's a really good idea. The Green Team helps to foster a connection and helps remind you how meaningful nature is, which is pretty important given how buried all of us can be in our work and especially in our phones and devices. Yet the climate action team wants to harness your knowledge and energy and maybe some of the ideas on the ribbon tree we were talking about into action. Now, did you go to the school board to petition some change?
Yes, me and Lauren, we went to the school board and we had a whole presentation that we spent a few days making a slideshow proposing why the school should at least think about adding solar, because we have an opportunity where they can add solar to the school at no cost to them. And yeah, they did say yes to the proposal. They did say they'd think about it. So we're waiting on like hearing from that.
That's really huge. I know the school, as you might, from your travels. Woodland Hills High School has a lot of area, nice flat roof. There's lots of places that solar cells could be put right on site. Is that what the project would involve?
Yeah, it would involve having it. It's just the high school for now. That's what our proposal was, just the high school. But that's what it was, to get solar in the high school so we could run, like, we would eventually want to run completely on solar, but at least so we can start running on solar.
So how did you, that's a pretty big deal. Had you ever spoken to the school board before?
Nope, that was my first time.
So here you are put in a position where you need to use your powers of persuasion. And there's a lot I want to ask you about it. First of all, did you find the school board to show appropriate respect and interest in your idea universally? Or were there some people that perhaps didn't want to think about these types of issues?
Everybody seemed very like respectful and attentive, and they were like very nice, like, okay, thank you. And then they did also say agree to it, and it was a pretty, like, they didn't argue, like, they didn't not argue, but they didn't like really have to have much talk about it. They kind of just agreed to it. So they definitely all seemed very like attentive.
That's good to know. And that's a tough question. If you experience something different, it would be hard probably to say that. I didn't want to put you in an uncomfortable position, but I'm glad. And frankly, if a school board member speaks up in that way, making other people aware of it is not a bad thing to do, because that person probably wants his or her opinions to be known. So how did you develop your rationale for doing this? Did you show things like what the equipment would be like or what the payback period? I'm just curious how you presented your case.
So how we presented it is basically we had a slideshow and we started off showing everything that we've done recently, like the climate summit and the ribbon tree and things like that. And then we just took that, we proposed it. We didn't try to draw out our proposal. We just said what it was. And then we were like, thank you all for having us. We talked about all of the like successes Woodland Hills had, and how Woodland Hills was rated like the one of the most like greenest schools or something like that. And then we were just like, thank you again. Thank you for your time. And then we went and sat down.
And then did you actually hear them debate and discuss your idea as you were there sitting down?
Honestly, no. I didn't even realize they had said yes to ours, because it wasn't like they didn't make it a big thing at all. It just like popped up on the screen that it said yes. And then we asked the guy who was like, I forgot, I cannot remember his name, I'm sorry. But we asked him, we were like, hey, did ours get accepted? And he was like, yeah. And we were like, oh, cool.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Congratulations. So now I would imagine, because I know school boards pretty well, they probably have to put out what's called an RFP to get companies to show interest in doing it? Is that the next step?
I honestly don't know, because they just basically, our proposal was for them to consider it, not for them to agree to it. So they're still probably talking about it, because it is a really big change.
That makes sense. But that's good. That's you have them on the record saying you'll consider it. And I get the feeling from your research, it's going to be pretty hard to not consider implementing it, right? Because do you think they're likely, certainly, to pollute less on overall from the grid, but they're probably going to save money at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, the solar is at no cost to them. That was like a big thing we showed, because obviously that's definitely something that can convince somebody. And power, electricity does cost a lot of money, especially when you own a big school like that. So it would definitely save them money to have solar natural energy.
Well, that's a great accomplishment. So I'm curious about so many different things, but one of them is automobiles, combustion engines in general. They're a huge source of pollution because they can't always be controlled as easily. You know, a power plant, at least it's all in one place, and you can either come up with a superior design for it to pollute less, or you can capture the emissions. Do you think that part of the key is dealing with our reliance on automobiles and the way that we've kind of been conditioned to live that way?
Yeah, I definitely feel like people should stop relying on them so much. But I also have to sympathize with people who do, because, like, obviously I do, too. That's how I got here. I really wish they would improve public transport, because I take the bus to go to work, and it's not ideal. It's very hard to see where you're going. It's hard to see what buses are coming and going. So I feel like the only way for them to even consider, like, for people to consider to stop relying on their car so much is for that, like, the public transport system to improve.
So that's a big economic there's a math problem in there somewhere, right? We could pollute less and have a better quality of life and spend less money remediating or protecting the environment if only we took that money and invested it in transit. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
When you take a bus, so you live in Turtle Creek, where is your job?
I'm actually currently working at the high school. We are, I'm with the SCA, and we are cleaning up the high school's courtyard and adding, like, flowers in and things like that.
That's fantastic. But taking public transit, right, not the school bus, how is it, one bus or multiple buses?
Luckily I only have to take one bus. So I take it, and then I go I can't go straight to the high school because there's nothing that gets me that close, but then one of my, like, leaders from the SCA comes and picks me up and takes me to the high school. But luckily I only have to get on one bus.
That's because I know kids, we work with students, we work with, sometimes we'll have to take as many as three buses to get here, which is crazy.
Yeah.
When you think of that amount of time. There's some more things I'd like to ask about you, but is there anything else you'd like to say about the work that you've done on the Climate Action Team, the Green Team, or through Communitopia?
Honestly, I don't really have too much more. Like, I can't think of anything on the top of my head because I've been doing a lot. So it's like,
yeah,
it's all there. I can't think of anything.
Great. I did mean to ask if there's anybody you wanted to thank, whether it be a teacher or, you mentioned Lauren before, but anybody else, or any shout-outs you might have to anybody who's listening now or who might hear a copy of this when it's rebroadcast?
Definitely Lauren from Communitopia. She has helped me do a lot of things that I never would have done. Like, I never would have done the summit. I never would have gone to the school board. She's so supportive, and she's just a great person to be around. I'm actually still working with her in the PYCA. We're having meets. We're actually having two meets this month.
That's Pittsburgh Youth Conservation
Action, I think. Action. I'm pretty sure Action. Okay. yeah, sometimes it slips my head because I just call it the PYCA so much. But yeah, so I'm still working with her. We're still figuring out things we can do to help, and she's great. And Mr. Scholler, he runs the green team, and he's great too.
I also was curious what your other interests are, sports or music or just what you like to do for fun in addition. This probably is fun too, but other things you like to do.
I play the cello, so that's fun. And the only really other thing I do, well, I am also in a lot of other clubs. I'm in student council. I'm in 12 Deep. I'm in like a few things here or there. And then I also have a lot of animals, like I was saying earlier. So that's a large part of my time is taking care of them.
Have you thought about what you might like to do after you graduate? I know you have a couple years, but...
I want to go to college to study zoology and then see where life takes me with that knowledge from there.
That's terrific. I'm not surprised you mentioned the animals before. So one last question for you. If I gave you a magic wand, if there and maybe one or two behaviors you could change instantly. Can you think of any, you know, human behavior that you wish you could just change? That it doesn't have to be tied to the environment, but I suspect it might be. But maybe not. In fact, let me give you three wishes. If you had to make a wish and you knew it would be granted, any thoughts about what you'd wish for?
The first one would definitely be having people be more open-minded to learning about, like, not just climate change issues in our world that people just ignore or are like, that's not real. So definitely, one would definitely be having people be more open-minded. Another would probably be, like, for people to live more sustainably and not using as much, like, waste. And another would be for people to treat animals better.
What a great person you are, Abby. It's really been fun to talk to you. Is there anything else you wanted to add or say?
No, I had a lot of fun doing this, and I had a lot of fun meeting you.
Yeah, I hope you'll keep in touch. And after we're done during the next station break, I'll tell you about some of our programs for creating media. If it interests you, you might be able to make a podcast or a story about your work that we can distribute, you know, on your behalf or work together to do. So we'll talk about that. Thank you. It's you're great to have somebody representing what I consider my alma mater in Woodland Hills. So thanks. That's Abby Whippich, who is 16 and going into 11th grade at Woodland Hills High School in Turtle Creek. And we congratulate her for her great work. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with the aforementioned Abby Whippich, Chad Green, Alexis Thompson, and Ricky Berger. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIU PFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, and internet radio stations and streaming services everywhere, including slbradio.org/radio.
Ain't gonna let nobody
turn me around.
Blind Boys of Alabama Freedom Road from their album Higher Ground. Coming up, we've got music from Melina Bowser.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks with guts defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I wanna shake your hand, sitting in